Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and I want to talk about the UN speech yesterday by Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi. This is very possibly the most significant event at the General Assembly session in a significant year. With us for this is the Wall Street Journal UN correspondent, Joe Loria. Joe, thanks very much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Very much. Good to talk to you.
So here's the first democratically elected president in arguably the most important Arab Spring country, touting democracy and his version of political Islam at the same time, rejecting absolute free speech to criticize religion, which President Obama touted in his address. So he flew directly in the face of the President of the United States. He also dished to both Israel and Iran on the issue of nuclear weapons. What did you learn about Mohamed Morsi as he took the world stage?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. He is without doubt the most important figure to have emerge from these uprisings. And I think it's useful to look, to put a historical context in what these uprisings have meant in Egypt and across the region. You know, and in many ways, it's the last throes of the Cold War, in which the Middle East was a battleground between the U.S. and Western-backed democracies and their allied Islamist groups like the Muslim Brotherhood against Soviet-aligned secular dictators like Nasser and those who've modeled themselves after him that we've seen go by the boards now after his pan-Arabist type of socialism, Saddam Hussein, Hafez Assad, Gaddafi. And Gaddafi and Saddam were really the last stand of that era. The last one now remaining is Bashar al-Assad, right, and he's facing a Western and monarchy-backed Islamist uprising as well. And the West and these Muslim groups have had associations going back to 1926, the Muslim Brotherhood established pretty much by the British as a force against nationalists who were threatening their puppet king, Farouk. And the U.S. continued this relationship with Islamist groups, most notably in Afghanistan with the Mujahideen. And now we've seen the U.S. aligning themselves again with Islamist groups in Libya to overthrow Gaddafi, and this is still part of that Cold War pattern. Now we've got out of this, less ominously perhaps, than those extremist groups in Libya that killed the American ambassador last week, is the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. It's the first time an Islamist group has come to power, a Sunni Islamist group has come to power that was supported and backed by the West. So the entire world, West and Egyptians themselves, have their eyes on Morsi to see what direction he's going to bring Egypt. And he's worrying people at home, secularists at home, and he's worrying the West and the Americans. And I think in this speech he tried to allay their fears by saying he'd create a modern democratic Egypt, but he spelled out no details in his speech about how he'd do that.
He did say, according to the translation that I'm reading from, Egypt respects freedom of expression, but not a freedom of expression that targets a specific religion or a specific culture. So was he either directly or indirectly referring to the anti-Muhammad video or the pro-Israel, anti-jihad subway posters, for that matter, that strike many as anti-Islam?
I don't know if he knew about the subway poster, but he certainly was referring to the video. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I wonder if anyone has asked Morsi, since he framed it generally as not a freedom of expression that targets a specific religion or a specific culture, not just in the context of Islam, what he thinks about Ahmadinejad's Holocaust denial or many of the horrific anti-Semitic images that have been known to appear in Arab media, including Egyptian media. Would he give those? Has he given those denunciation as he's given those that denounce Islam?
Well, if he means what he says, he would have to, but I do not think he has. And I don't know of anyone who's asked him that, but it would be quite interesting if he were asked that.
Does Morsi's speech signal anything about what kind of president of all the people of Egypt that he's going to be? Because, as you know, his biggest skeptics in this country say he is on a glide path to an Iranian or Saudi-style theocracy, back to the Muslim Brotherhood's roots. Others think there is a whole new style of democracy may be necessary for this moment in that part of the world as it emerges from that Cold War history you were talking about and colonizations and everything else, but one that maybe is realistically progressive given where the population is starting. How do you read the clues?
Well, the Muslim Brotherhood has been notoriously hard to read. They've come in and out of legality in Egypt and has to try to crush them. They were brought back by Sadat and And then Mubarak fought against them, and they were then allowed to be independents, if you recall, in the last government of Mubarak, but did not exist legally. And now they're in power, and no one knows exactly what they are going to do because they have officially renounced violence. That was 30 years ago, and supposedly an offshoot of them, of their group, killed Sadat after the Camp David Accord. But we really cannot tell what they're going to do in power. And, of course, it's much more difficult to be in power than in opposition. So they have to provide. They've got to create this modern democratic state, despite their extensive network throughout the villages of Upper Egypt, where people usually vote according to what their village elders tell them. And they have created these social welfare systems and secured those votes. But now the world focuses on them, and they're in the capital, and they've got to deliver. And no one exactly knows whether they will or not. And we see signs where anchor women on TV are wearing their heads are covered now. And these are starting to worry certain people. But I think what's also very interesting in his speech is that he talked about Egypt getting its central role back in the Middle East. And, of course, under Nasser in the 70s, it was the most powerful country in the Middle East. It challenged Saudi Arabia for supremacy. It didn't succeed in that Cold War battle that I was talking about. But here comes Morsi saying he wants Egypt to resume that role again. And he might very well do that because the sweep of these rebellions have been to see Islamist parties rise. And I think they've won this epic 50-60-year battle since the end of the Second World War in the Middle East. The monarchies and their allied Islamist groups, with Qatar backing the Muslim Brotherhood pretty much in Egypt and in Syria, and the Saudis, more the Salafist groups, they have won. They are winning. They'll probably win in Syria, and that's another reason why Morsi in his speech said, you know, he wants some action in Syria. It's clear in this historic context he wants to see a Muslim Brotherhood government come to power in Syria. So the idea of Egypt once again getting a central stage, this time in an alliance more or less with the Saudis and with the Gulf monarchies, it's a completely different face of the Middle East, and one I think we're seeing emerge right now. Now, at home, the secularist liberal groups that did very badly at the polls, so Mohammed al-Baradei, their best leader, did not take even part in these elections. They there and perhaps also in Syria are too small to make an effect to stop this tide of history at the moment and could be swept aside or marginalized.
Joe Loria, the UN correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, with us talking about Mohamed Morsi, the new president of Egypt's historic speech at the UN yesterday. But if you're saying that he's going to align himself with the Saudis and the monarchies of the Gulf, those are relatively pro-U.S. governments, and they're not the biggest hawks on Israel. So is that an indication that should leave the U.S. and Israel, for that matter, relatively comforted?
I think so. I mean, I don't know about how comfortable, because as I said, it's hard to read exactly what the Muslim Brotherhood will do. But his first trip abroad after he became president was to Saudi Arabia. And he reaffirmed yesterday that he will support and continue the Camp David Accord. There's a lot of nervousness about that. But he also condemned Israel very strongly as well, not in Mohammed Ahmadinejad terms, but he said that they were colonialists and that they were depriving Palestinians of their rights. So he's very strong on that. But to answer that question, it might be interesting to look at the relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas in the West Bank. And they were, of course, an allied group to the Muslim Brotherhood as well. You'd have to see and read that relationship, how it evolves, whether they try to rein in even the more extremist groups than Hamas in Gaza and stop the attacks, the rocket attacks against Israel, and make them amenable to talks with the Palestinian Authority to actually form some kind of unified government that could negotiate with Israel. I think that Mohamed Morsi could really make his mark there because he has such an important influence over Hamas, and that remains to be seen how much he has. That's where he can make his mark to bring about a more united Palestinian group to authority and the Hamas to negotiate with Israel. But we'll see whether he can do that, if that's even on the cards for him.
How about his statement from the speech then on nuclear nonproliferation? The region, of course, has Israel, which won't admit it has nukes and won't join the nonproliferation treaty. And the region has Iran, which has signed the treaty but seems to be lying about whether it's trying to develop nukes. Morsi suggested criticism for both,
right,
which means maybe he's got the right idea. But how did you hear that part of the speech?
Yeah, well, it's a kind of standard line of Middle East Arab leaders to try to enforce what was in the 1979 91 ceasefire resolution of the Security Council ended the U.S. the first Gulf War, which was that there would be a nuclear-free Middle East. And they've been trying since then, it's more than 20 years, to arrange a conference. And the Obama administration last year actually, or 2 years ago, I think, said that they would be willing to go to this conference. Now, Israel, of course, doesn't want to go. It's the biggest secret in the Middle East that they have maybe an arsenal of 200, 300 warheads. And Morsi just took his opportunity on the stage to make to remind Arab leaders and the rest of the world that Israel shouldn't have these missiles, that they should join the NPT and be subject to the same scrutiny as Iran is, and that Iran should comfort their neighbors and let the IAEA get in and do the inspections that they're required to allow under the NPT terms. So I think that was a pretty standard line of his on that one.
So where does this leave the United States? We denounce the theocracy in Iran because they threaten us and Israel. We prop up the theocracy in Saudi Arabia because we're dependent on their oil and their political support. We give in Egypt billions of aid a year for the last 30 years as part of the bargain for peace with Israel. What kinds of decisions does the U.S. need to make about Egypt under Morsi? And do you see Obama and Romney as different on that?
Well, Romney's going to say that he's different on that, obviously, in the lead-up to the election. And when any opportunity he sees weakness on the part of Obama, he's going to exploit. And obviously the attacks in Libya and the attack on the U.S. embassy near Tahrir Square and Cairo were good opportunities for him. But long-term, they number one, they want to maintain Camp David Accord. That's, I think, number one for the U.S. Number two, a good relationship with the military. That money goes to the military. The military was pushed out by Morsi in an extraordinary move that no one really saw about a couple of months ago. Just overnight, he decided they were out, and we had expected a long battle between the two. But the military maintains their grip on a large part of the economy, and they get all that aid, and they're going to be the guarantors of the Camp David Accord and security in Sinai. So I think the U.S. will maintain that relationship, and they're going to manage what Morsi is doing and look very carefully. And again, there's all these unknowns about him and the Muslim Brothers. They've been a very mysterious group in many ways, and their proclamations being one thing, but many people don't trust what they do. So we're seeing now, I don't think Morsi gave all that much indication in the speech of what direction he's heading, and certainly domestically. And as I said, on the Israeli nukes and other issues, he was pretty standard. So I think what's interesting is he wants Egypt to become a regional force and a regional power again, going back to the days of Nasser, but now in an Islamist coloring. So that is something, you know, the U.S. might not mind because, they, as I said, they got back through the Cold War and Britain did the monarchies and the Islamist groups against the Soviets. And now even that Russian rivalry still remains in Syria. And the Russians are very concerned about an Islamist group coming to power there. They certainly were hurt by the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, destroying the Soviet, kicking the Soviets out of there. And then through the Caucasus and the Bosnia, now in Syria, Islamist groups backed by the West and the monarchies, encroaching on Russian interests. So I think that's something we have to watch as well. This is still kind of a hangover from the Cold War in many ways. But as far as U.S. policy to Egypt, again, I think it's the maintenance of Camp David, it's the continuing relationship with the military, and to try to keep some kind of a close watch on what Morsi's doing at home. And again, in the middle, in the Palestinian-Israeli dispute, maybe they could help encourage him or push him to get Hamas to the table and really make a deal and really renounce violence this time and accept Israel's existence and go for a two-state solution. He could play a key role there, and the U.S. may be smart to push him doing that.
Let's hope. Wall Street Journal, U.N. correspondent Joe Loria, who took the Syria angle, by the way, for the lead in his story on the Morsi speech. Egypt's president calls for action on Syria in today's journal. Very interesting conversation. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Brian. Nice to talk to you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a new public art project, 100 images that will be sent into space. We'll see what's in there. And if you want to actually see a slideshow of some of these images, you can go to our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.